Okay, there's that horrible Britney Spears song that I just can't get out of my head, and that unfortunate incident with the hamster in grade six. Oh, and that blind date where, I don't even want to think about that one. In fact, there's a long list of things I'd really like to forget, but we can't really control what we remember, can we? Well, in fact, maybe we can. That's the surprising conclusion reached in a recent paper published in the journal Nature by Dr. Michael Anderson. He's a professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Oregon. Dr. Anderson and a colleague devised a test to see if people could suppress specific memories, and the results could have important implications for how we think memory works. Dr. Anderson, welcome to Quirks and Quarks.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
First of all, can you describe your experiment for me? What did you actually do?
Of course. Well, what we did is we trained people on pairs of words. So, for example, a pair might be ordeal, roach, very unrelated words. But we trained people to provide the second of those two words whenever they're given the first one. It created a powerful association in people's minds such that when you provided the first word, ordeal, the second word would literally leap to mind.
Okay, that's the remembering part.
That's the remembering part. And so the question is, if you've set up a situation like this where you've constructed a powerful reminder to something in memory, can you then train people to not think of that thing when that reminder is later presented? Oh. So in the second portion of our experiment, we ask people to do just that. For some of the word pairs that they had seen before, they were asked to continue to do exactly the same thing, namely whenever they saw the first word, come up with the second word as quickly as possible. But for the other word pairs, we told them that whenever they see the first word appear on the screen, whatever they do, they're not only supposed to not respond to these things, they're supposed to not allow the associated memory to enter consciousness at all. So there it would pop on the computer screen and they would go, oh! And they were supposed to just stare at it, stare this reminder in the face, and whatever they do, keep it out of consciousness.
Okay, so forget the second half of this association here. When it's okay to think about mm-hmm. the first word, but don't worry about the second that goes with it.
That's right, yeah.
Did it work?
Yes, it did, as a matter of fact. The critical test comes after this phase where, again, we pull another switcheroo on them, and we give them the stimulus member, or the first word of each of these pairs, and we say, okay, now we want you to come up with these words again. So whenever we give you the first word, come up with the second word. And so the question was, if you had in the past repeatedly tried to not think about the memory that goes with the reminder, what happens later on if I then give you that reminder and say, okay, now I want you to recall it? And what we found was people were less able to come up with that item even when they wanted to. Even when we gave them money, we said, please guess. Please, and we'll give you a monetary reward for every correct answer. And quite often, people could not come up with these things that they studiously tried to avoid just previously.
Wow. So they actually learned to forget something mm-hmm. that you had taught them to remember.
Yes. Now, that's exactly it.
Did everyone do that? How did that work across the group that you had?
Well, no, of course. Everyone didn't do it, and every person didn't do it for every item. What we found was that on average, across people and across lots of different word pairs, the tendency was for people to get worse and worse. So we actually varied how frequently we asked people to keep this thing out of mind. And what we found is the more often that people tried to do this, the worse and worse they got at recalling this memory. And in the absolute, it was something on the order of 10 to 12% deficit in recall. But what's important really is the trend, the tendency, because we only gave them approximately 1 minute in total to try to not think about this thing. And so you might imagine that if you extrapolate this process out over a very long period of time, that the memories would get worse and worse and worse.
So the more you practice at forgetting something, the better you are at it.
Pretty much. Although I do want to caution that it's not clear to me, and I think much research needs to be done to determine what the effects of this suppression is on the memory itself. So for example, suppose I brought subjects back into the laboratory 24 hours later and I found that they all of a sudden could recover a lot of these memories that they had previously suppressed. Does that necessarily mean that the memories are intact and pristine just the way they were before you suppressed them? I don't know. Maybe they're the same, or maybe they're disrupted in some way, fragmented perhaps. We have to do further experiments to see whether or not they're just stored away and totally unaffected.
Well, this whole issue of repressed or lost memories does stir up a little bit of controversy, especially in the area of childhood abuse, where people say they just don't remember, or there seems to be some kind of repression or selection going on there. What do you think this means for those types of memories?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Obviously, that's the first thing that people think of when they think of repression, is repression of trauma. I think that these results really kind of bring us a step closer, possibly, to understanding those kinds of circumstances, just to the extent that what people are doing is trying to say, I don't want to think about that, right? I don't want to think about that, and they try to push it out of mind. Well, you might imagine that somebody who's had a traumatic experience might be doing just the same thing. And so why wouldn't the mechanisms that we observe here also apply under those circumstances? But it's important to note that this laboratory procedure, it is a simple laboratory procedure which uses relatively unemotional stimuli. They're pretty neutral word pairs. It might be very different if we were trying to apply these processes to truly traumatic or upsetting experiences.
But what's interesting about your experiment is that you kept the trigger word there. You kept the thing that made the memory, the second word, mm-hmm. or the first word. You said, keep thinking about that, but don't think about the second one. And if you have something like child abuse, the source of that abuse might still be around.
Mm-hmm.
The memory's gone. I mean, is that what's happening here?
Oh, yeah. That's really interesting that you should bring that up. It's in fact, what's so paradoxical about these findings, if you think about it, what we're doing is we're presenting people with reminders to the very memory they're supposed to not think about. As it turns out, there is a very interesting parallel in the clinical psychology literature on traumatic amnesia, in which people who report having been sexually abused as children are far more likely to report having had a period of forgetting of that memory followed by memory recovery if they were abused by a parent or guardian, as opposed to being abused by a complete stranger. When you're abused by somebody that you have to live with on a day-to-day basis, that is when you get the most forgetting, which is so paradoxical. Most people wouldn't expect that because you're living with the reminders to the memory. And so that's very much like, I think, what we're trying to model in this procedure. Reminders all the time and the task of not thinking about it. Well, that's what we did in our experiment. So it might have relevance to those sorts of situations.
You learn to forget.
You learn to forget.
Dr. Anderson, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Michael Anderson is a professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Oregon in Corvallis.